Chapter 6. The crusade against the great beasts was to continue for another year before the last bastion of monsters was ready to be assailed. The dense, tangled, and lethal forests of the dark North Wilds remained to be purged of the monsters, yet this was the one place the warriors of the Order and its allies had not yet entered. In part, this was due to the difficulty of mounting any organized, systematic hunt within its depths. Much of the forest was so dense as to be virtually impenetrable to riders, and even the hardy warriors of the Ravenwing would not ride within such places unless called to do so by their masters. Settlements existed within the North Wilds, heavily defended villages, with high walls built upon great rock plains or within the depths of wide hills, but these were few and far between, and populated by resentful people who bemoaned their lot in life without ever daring to improve it. In truth, the real reason the crusade had not yet ventured into the North Wilds was the antipathy of the Knights of Lupus. A knightly brotherhood, known for its scholars and great libraries, the Knights of Lupus had vehemently opposed the idea of any campaign against the beasts, and had spoken out against Luther and Lionel Johnson many years earlier. Alone of the other orders who had voted against Johnson's proposal to rid the forests of the great beasts, the Knights of Lupus had refused to go with the will of the majority once the matter had been decided. Instead, they had made warlike noises, threatening to launch their own counter-campaign of war against the Order and its allies. In the end, Luther broached a compromise. The details of the agreement he made had never been revealed, but whatever terms had been offered, the Knights of Lupus had retreated to their mountain fastness in the North Wilds and took no action against the Order. For 10 years, the Knights of Lupus had watched from their fortress as Johnson's campaign achieved victory after victory. Region by region, the great beasts were cleared from the forests of Caliban. As the years went by, and the campaign came closer to realizing Johnson's ambitions, the minds of most people on Caliban turned to the beckoning of a golden age. The Lion's campaign had progressed to the very border of the North Wilds, long Knights of Lupus stronghold, and the only region of Caliban left where the great beasts still existed. Almost inevitably, when the Order entered the North Wilds, there would be conflict. A group of armed supplicants gathered in the centre of the training halls in the pattern of an outward-facing circle, their swords extended before them in a defensive posture. Zahariel stood in the centre of the circle back-to-back with Nemiel, while another class of supplicants surrounded them and watched their sword drills. Brother Amadis walked a slow lap of the circle, his hands laced behind his back, as he oversaw this latest training session of the Order's supplicants. The students gathered around the circle were a year or so younger than those forming it, and were all armed with wooden training swords. Though blunt, each had a lead bar at its core which would make any impact painful in the extreme. "You have trained in this manner for years," said Amadis, addressing the younger supplicants, "and you appreciate the defensive strength of the circle, but you do not appreciate its symbolic strength. Who within the circle can tell these students why we fight in this manner?" As so often happened, Nemiel answered first. "By standing in a circle, each warrior is able to protect the man to his left. It's a classic defensive formation to be used when heavily outnumbered."
"Indeed so, Nemiel," said Amadis. "But why the inner circle?"
This time Zahariel answered, saying, "A circle is stronger with another circle inside it. It's an old battle doctrine of Caliban."
"Correct," said Amadis. "The idea of concentric circles, each inside the other, has been the basis for the defences of all the great and abiding fortress monasteries of Caliban. By creating an inner circle to guard and watch over the wider grouping of warriors on the outer circle, the defence cannot be breached. Now, attack!"
The younger supplicants threw themselves at the circle, their wooden blades stabbing and chopping towards the older boys. The boys in the outer circle fought well, deflecting the blows of their attackers with a skill born of an extra year's training, but they were outnumbered 3-1, and inevitably some strikes hit home. Zahariel watched the battle unfold with clinical precision, turning on the spot with Nemiel always at his back as they struck out at any potential breaches of the circle. Swords clashed and clattered for 10 minutes, but not a single breach had been made in the outer circle. Amadis shouted names as he declared boys dead, and those boys limped from the circle holding bruised and broken arms and nursing their shame, as the outer circle drew closer to keep their line intact. Zahariel stabbed and cut as the younger supplicants threatened to overwhelm them, and Nemiel did likewise on his blind side. The bout continued for another 15 minutes, with no sign of the circle formation breaking, and then Amadis called an end to the session. Both Zahariel and Nemiel were drenched in sweat, the battle having taken its toll on their reserves of strength. Fighting at such intensity for any length of time was difficult, but fighting at the inner circle was particularly draining. Brother Amadis walked amongst the exhausted supplicants as he said, "Now you see the benefit of the inner circle and the strength we gain from its presence. Remember this when you go into battle and you cannot fail. It is a truism, but alone we are weak. Together, we are strong. Each of you will one day face battle, and if you cannot look to your brother and know without thinking that you can trust him, then you are lost. Only when such bonds are ironclad do they mean anything. For the moment that trust is not instantly reciprocated, the circle breaks and you are dead. Dismissed." The supplicants picked themselves up from the stone floor of the training hall in ones and twos, wearing linen towels draped around their necks and nursing tired and battered limbs. Nemiel wiped the sweat from his face with his sleeve and said, "That was a tough one and no mistake." Zahariel nodded, too tired to answer. "He's working as hard, eh?" continued Nemiel. "You'd think we were actually about to go into battle or something."
"You never know," said Zahariel at last. "We might be. The representatives of the Knights of Lupus are due to arrive later today, and if what I hear is true, we might indeed be making war soon."
"On the Knights of Lupus?"
asked Attias, coming over with one of his notebooks tucked under his arm.
"It's what I hear," said Zahariel.
"You got all that Brother Amadis said?"
remarked Nemiel, as Eliath joined them.
"I did," said Attias, "give or take a word or two."
"Maybe if you practice more swordplay instead of scribbling in your books, you wouldn't have left us open to attack," said Eliath, though there was no malice in the words, only good-humoured banter.
"And maybe if you weren't so fat, you'd have been able to avoid their attacks."
The boys smiled at the familiar jibes, though they were spoken in jest rather than with malice. In the year since the attack of the winged beast in the forest, the four of them had passed beyond the rancour that had divided them and had become fast friends, the shared near-death experience bringing them closer than anything else could. Attias had filled out into a fine figure of a boy, with handsome features, broad shoulders and taut muscles corded around his limbs. Eliath was still the biggest of them, his muscles bulging and powerful, any hint of fat long since burned from his slab-like frame, though he was still the least agile of them.
"Seriously, though, you think we might make war on the Knights of Lupus?"
asked Attias.
"I don't know. Maybe," said Zahariel, wishing he had not brought the subject up.
Brother Amadis had told him that Lord Sartana of the Knights of Lupus was travelling to Alderuk to protest at the Order's knights venturing into the North Wilds, and though he had not been told to keep the information to himself, he still felt like he was betraying a confidence in sharing it with his brothers.
"Zahariel, Nemiel, get cleaned up and report to my chambers in 15 minutes. Full dress surplus, weapons and ceremonial attire."
Both boys looked up in puzzlement, surprised at the arrival of Brother Amadis.
"Sir," said Nemiel, "what's going on?"
"The lion wants the best of our supplicants on display when Lord Sartana walks into the circle chamber, and you're it. Now hurry, he's already here, and apparently in no mood to dally. Move."
Zahariel shifted nervously from foot to foot as he and Nemiel stood at the edge of the plinth at the centre of the circle chamber. They had marched in with Brother Amadis at their head a few minutes ago, thrilled and not a little honoured to have been allowed to follow him in through the western cloister gate. The higher entrances to the chamber were for the lower-ranked members of the order, and only the senior knights were permitted to enter the chamber through the cloister gates. Normally supplicants, and those lower in rank than a full knight, were forced to enter and sit in the benches high above, but the senior members of the order had granted special dispensation for this occasion. The corridors and chambers of Alderuk were fairly buzzing with activity. Their little group, passing knights, squires, and supplicants, rushing from place to place on no doubt vital errands in preparation for the arrival of Lord Sartana. Ceremonial banners were being dusted off and hung from the roof of the chamber, the warlike banners of red and crimson replaced with those that recalled a legendary past and conjured images of brotherhood and confraternity. Robed and hooded members of the order were filling the stone benches around the centre of the chamber, though no supplicants other than those accompanying senior brothers of the order were present.
"Is this Sartana really that important?"
whispered Nemil, careful to keep his voice soft, for the circle chamber's acoustics were incredible. Zahariel nodded.
"I think so. He's the most senior member of the Knights of Lupus.
I thought they'd pretty much died out."
"No," said Zahariel, "though they're much reduced from their former glory, it's true.
What happened to them?"
Zahariel thought back to what he'd heard the seneschals talking about below the halls and chambers of the noble knights in the years after he had first joined the order.
"They were opposed to the Lion's campaign against the great beasts and retreated to their mountain stronghold while the Order and its allies began cleansing the forests. I heard that a significant number of their knights and supplicants defected to join the Order when they saw how successful the campaign was."
"They left their own brothers?"
asked Nemiel in surprise.
"So they say,"
agreed Zahariel.
"I imagine they must have been hard and joyless years for them, since the recruitment of new supplicants dwindled to barely more than a handful each season. Within a few years, perhaps another decade at most, the Knights of Lupus faced the real prospect that they would cease to be viable as a knightly order."
"How sad," said Nemiel,
"to be on the brink of oblivion, not through glorious heroic death or epic battle, but by obsolescence."
"Don't write them off yet," said Brother Armadis, appearing at their shoulders. "There's never more life in a beast than when it thinks it's cornered."
"Brother Armadis, I have a question," said Nemiel.
"Yes, go on, but hurry. Sartana will be here soon."
"Zahariel tells me that the Knights of Lupus have almost no supplicants, that their numbers dwindle."
"That's not a question," pointed out Zahariel.
"I know, I'm getting there," said Nemiel. "What I mean to say is that, is it not a little, well, brash, to flaunt the Order's supplicants before Lord Sartana like this?"
Armadis smiled and said,
"Very perceptive of you, young Nemiel."
"So why do it?"
"It is a good question, so I will indulge you," said Armadis. "In all likelihood, Lord Sartana does not come with conciliation in mind. I believe the Lion and Luther wish to make a tacit display that will speak of our strength in the years ahead."
"And if Lord Sartana can be made to think that he cannot oppose us, he will more readily agree to our warriors campaigning in the North Wilds," completed Zahariel.
"Something like that," agreed Armadis. "Now be quiet. We are about to begin."
Zahariel turned his gaze to the eastern cloister gate as two lines of hooded banner bearers entered, their faces cloaked in shadow and their steps ponderous. They parted with grim solemnity as they reached the edge of the circle and followed its circumference until they formed a ring of banners around the plinth. Each banner was planted in a cup sunk into the floor, and the banner bearers knelt behind them, heads bowed as the masters of the order entered. The Lion and Luther marched into the chamber, resplendent in black plate and flowing white cloaks that hung from bronze pins at their shoulders. The Lion dwarfed Luther, as always, but to Zahariel's eyes, both were cut from the same magnificent cloth. The Lion's expression was grim, while Luther's was open, but Zahariel could see the tension etched in the tight lines around his eyes and jaw. The knights of the order, gathered in the benches, stood and banged their fists on their breastplates at the sight of their most heroic brothers, the noise deafening as each knight displayed the proper respect for his betters. The senior knights of the order accompanied the Lion and Luther, including Lord Cypher and several of the highest-ranked battle knights, the warriors skilled in leading armies and marshalling great numbers of troops. It seemed this was to be more than a tacit display of strength, but a very real show of martial might. A warrior, in gleaming bronze plate armour and a long wolfskin cloak, stood alongside Luther. The skull and upper jaw of the lupine beast was fashioned into the peak of the warrior's helmet, its front paws draped over the pauldrons at his shoulders. This, then, was Lord Sartana, a powerful man with age-weathered features and a drooping silver moustache. His eyes were heavy-lidded and grey, and his expression one of belligerence. He was clearly all too aware of the none-too-subtle display of the Order's strength. A trio of wolf-cloaked warriors accompanied him, each with a similarly bushy moustache, and each older than many of the most senior knights of the Order. The warriors reached the centre of the circle, and the lion raised his hands for silence, which was duly delivered. Zahariel spared an excited glance at Nemiel at the sight of so many senior knights in such proximity. The lion turned to Lord Sartana and extended his hand.
"I welcome you to the circle chamber, where brother meets brother without rank or station, where all are equal. Welcome, brother."
To Zahariel's ears, the words sounded flat and devoid of meaning, as though the lion had swallowed the bitterest ashes to speak them. Lord Sartana clearly thought so too, and disdained to accept the proffered hand.
"I asked for a private meeting, my Lord Johnson, not this. The Order is a place of honesty, Lord Sartana," said Luther, his voice conciliatory and soothing. "We have no secrets, and wish to be transparent in our dealings with you."
"Then why these blatant theatrics?" snapped Sartana. "You think I am some simpleton to be impressed by your parade of new recruits and senior knights?"
"These are no theatrics," said the lion. "They are reminders of your brotherhood status on Caliban."
"Our status?" said Lord Sartana. "So you agree to this meeting simply to humiliate me. Is that it?"
Luther stepped between the two warriors, eager to defuse the hostile atmosphere before things degenerated to a point where weapons might be drawn.
"My lords,"
said Luther, again modulating his voice to sound entirely reasonable and placating, "such talk is beneath us. We are here so that all may witness the fairness and justice of our talk. It must be seen that there is no dishonesty between us."
"Then let us speak of how your warriors have violated the treaty between us," said Sartana.
"Violated the treaty?" snapped the lion. "What treaty? There was no treaty."
"Assurances were given many years ago," said Sartana, "by you, Luther. When you journeyed to our fortress, you claimed that Johnson gave an iron assurance that he would keep his warriors away from the North Wilds. As we both know, that has not been the case."
"No," said the lion, an edge of anger entering his voice. "It has not."
Zahariel wondered that any man could stand before such a threat.
"Your men slaughtered a group of our hunters. Men with families were killed by fully armed knights, who sent a lone survivor back with the butchered bodies of his comrades."
"Those men had come to map the valleys on the edge of the North Wilds."
"The edges of your territories are home to beasts," said the lion. "Beasts that still ravage our lands. The town of Endriago alone has suffered nearly 200 dead at the hands of one. The time has come to finish the job and destroy the last of the great beasts."
At the mention of Endriago, Zahariel felt Brother Amadis stiffen his stance and saw that his hands had drawn into clenched fists.
"You might clear the great beast from the rest of Caliban," said Sartana, "but the North Wilds and the lands of the Knights of Lupus were to be sacrosanct. We were promised that our lands would be a haven and that the beasts there would be left in peace. This agreement had the force of a treaty. By sending your warriors into our lands, you are an oath-breaker."
"Talk sense, man," said the lion. "There was never any assurance made about leaving the North Wilds alone. What kind of sense would it make for us to do so? What would be the virtue of slaying the beasts everywhere else on Caliban, only to leave a pocket of the creatures still remaining? No, if there was any violation, it was by the Knights of Lupus when they killed the Order's warriors. All the rest of it, these falsehoods and lies, are simply a flimsy pretext to justify your actions."
"Then you set the stage for war, Lord Johnson," said Sartana.
"If that is what it takes to free Caliban of the beasts, then I do, Lord Sartana," said the lion,
and Zahariel could hear a fierce relish in his tone, as though goading Sartana into a war had been his intention all along.
"I will not stop in the pursuit of my goal of ridding Caliban of the beasts," said the lion. "And if your warriors try to stop me, it will be the end of them. Your order has fewer warriors, and most have not set foot from your libraries in years. Do you really think you can stop me?
Probably not, admitted Sartana.
Then why stand against me?
Because, in your monomaniacal quest to destroy, you will not be satisfied until you have all Caliban under your heel, said Lord Sartana. The Knights of Lupus do not wish to be subject to your decrees. Now, if this farce of a discussion is at an end, I will take my leave and return to my brethren.
Without waiting for any dismissal, Lord Sartana turned on his heel and marched from the Circle Chamber, his wolf-cloaked acolytes following him. A thunderous silence fell on the assembled knights of the Order at such audacity, each warrior looking to his neighbour as if to confirm that they understood the import of the words that had passed between the Lion and Lord Sartana, that they were as good as at war with the Brotherhood of Lupus. Brother Armadis broke the silence, stepping from his position at the edge of the circle and calling out to the Lion,
"My Lord Johnson!" cried Armadis. "Is it true? Is Endriago attacked by a beast?"
At first, Zahariel wondered if the Lion had heard the question, for long moments passed before he turned to face Armadis. His face was set in stone, and Zahariel felt a shudder of fear pass along his spine at the look of warlike fury etched into his features. Then, as though a ray of sunlight passed over his face, the vengeful anger was gone, and a look of deep concern took its place.
"Brother Armadis," said the Lion, "I'm afraid it is true. Word reached us only yesterday. A beast has slain a great many of Endriago's people, though no one knows yet what manner of creature stalks the dark forest."
"Endriago is the place of my birth, Lord Johnson," said Armadis. "I must avenge the deaths it has caused to my people."
The Lion nodded and listened to Luther's whispered comment as Armadis dropped to one knee.
"My Lord Johnson," said Armadis, "I declare a quest against the beast of Endriago."